The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew Podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading and tomorrow's reading are from Seneca's letter number 18, subtitled On Festivals and Fasting. Now, let me explain why we're doing this. Tomorrow is the fast day of Asara Bateves, and I thought it would be interesting to examine the similarities and differences between the Stoic idea of fasting and the Jewish idea of fasting. This letter happens to, from Seneca, happens to deal with it. The letter is actually too long to include in the show notes, so I'll just include a link to the free PDF version. And we're going to do half of the letter today and half of the letter tomorrow. And I'll interject, since the text of the letter is long, then I'll interject with the various points rather than reading through the whole thing. So this is a letter to, like all of his letters, this is a letter to Lucilius, his student. It is the month of December, and yet the city is at this very moment in a sweat. License is given to general merrymaking. Everything resounds with mighty preparations, as if the Saturnalia differed at all from the usual business day. So true it is that the difference is nil, that I regard as correct the remark of the man who said, once December was a month, now it is a year. Okay, so I'm sure many of our non-Jewish friends can relate to that, you know, the month-long preparations around Christmas and New Year's, which have, you know, kind of taken up the mantle, taken the place of Saturnalia in our society. I just wanted to stop here and note the fact, I was discussing this with a friend, he pointed out that, you know, there were lots of ancient pagan festivals, you know, in the winter. And that reminded me of an excellent blog post that I read by Rabbi Joshua Maruf entitled The Celebration of Hanukkah, Rededicating the Original Winter Festival. I'll include a link to that in the show notes here. But just to give us a teaser, so Rabbi Maruf points out the fact that there are zero winter holidays in Torah. Okay, our last holiday of the year is Shemini Atzeres, which is at the end of the Harvest Festival. And we don't have any other holiday until Pesach in the spring. Okay, so that entire you know 6 months is without any holidays, but the rabbis instituted Hanukkah in the winter. And Rabbi Maruf has a very interesting theory based on or at least prompted by a midrash. And I encourage you to read it. I know Hanukkah is over, but I think there's still value. Hanukkah is over for this year, at least. There's still value in reading what he has to say because it also reflects our attitude or the Torah's attitude towards the non-Jewish winter holidays. Okay, anyway, back to the letter. Seneca continues, if I had you with me, I should be glad to consult you and find out what you think should be done, whether we ought to make no change in our daily routine, or whether, in order not to be out of sympathy with the ways of the public, we should dine in gayer fashion and doff the toga. As it is now, we Romans have changed our dress for the sake of pleasure and holiday making, though in former times that was only customary when the state was disturbed and had fallen on evil days. Just footnote here, I read somewhere that the toga used to be a uniform for bad times, and then somehow it became the costume or the dress for pleasure and holiday making. I find that interesting. All right, I'm sure, he goes on, I am sure that if I know you aright, playing the part of an umpire, you would have wished that we should be neither like the liberty capped throng in all ways, nor in all ways unlike them, unless perhaps this is just the season when we ought to lay down the law to the soul and bid it be alone in refraining from pleasures, just when the whole mob has let itself go in pleasures. For this is the surest proof which a man can get of his own constancy, if he neither seeks the things which are seductive and allure him into luxury, nor is led into them. So he's basically saying right now that that you might say, Lucilius, that we should just refrain from all pleasure and merrymaking here. But now he's going to give his own opinion. So Seneca says, it shows much more courage to remain dry and sober when the mob is drunk and vomiting, but it shows greater self-control to refuse to withdraw oneself and to do what the crowd does, but in a different way, thus neither making oneself conspicuous nor becoming one of the crowd, for one may keep the holiday without extravagance. So when I read this, I associated it to how we do simcha, rejoicing, on our holidays, on Yom Tov. So, you know, we definitely hold in Judaism that the festivals should be celebrated with you know, merrymaking, right? With meat and wine and food and celebrations. But we have the halacha of chatzi l'Hashem, chatzi l'chem, half for Hashem, half for you, which the Rambam codifies in the Mishneh Torah Sefer Zmanim Hilchos Shvisas Yom Tov 6:19, where he says, even though eating and drinking on the festivals is included within the positive commandment, a person should not eat and drink the entire day. Rather, this is the program. In the morning, the entire populace wakes up early and goes to the synagogues and study halls where they pray and read in the Torah about the themes of the day. Then they return to their houses to eat, after which they go back to the study halls to read and learn until midday. After midday, they pray the afternoon prayer and return to their houses to eat and drink for the remainder of the day until the night. So in other words, the program is you spend the first half of the day involved primarily in activities that are Lashem, that are for Hashem, so to speak. Obviously, you're not benefiting Hashem, but basically learning and praying. And then the second half of the day is lachen, is for you, is eating and drinking. So the first explanation I ever heard of this, I don't remember where I heard it from, was that, you know, the human being is a hybrid creature, so to speak. We have an immaterial tzelem elokim, a truth-seeking intellect, which is our higher nature. And then we also have a body, which we share with the animals, and a psyche. And therefore, the form that rejoicing takes on the holidays is to you know, have joy for both halves of the body. But then I heard a shir from my Rosh Yeshiva several years ago, and the upshot of the shir was that really the essential rejoicing is the eating and drinking. However, if we just ate and drank, then it would be indistinguishable from an animalistic indulgence. And so what we do is we spend the first half of the day catering to our higher nature, and what that does is it qualifies the physical pleasures and psychological pleasures we engage in afterwards in a truly human fashion. In other words, it's a different eating and drinking on the afternoons of Yom Tov when you've spent the morning learning and davening. So I thought that was a good that's the Jewish take on this idea of not merrymaking like the masses do. Okay, then he said, going on with Seneca again, so this is where he starts talking about fasting. I am so firmly determined, however, to test the constancy of your mind that, drawing from the teachings of great men, I shall give you a lesson. Set aside a certain number of days during which you shall be content with the scantiest and cheapest fare, with coarse and rough dress, saying to yourself all the while, is this the condition that I feared? So he's advising him, basically set aside a couple days and eat really, really low quality foods and wear really low quality garments. Seneca goes on, it is precisely in times of immunity from care that the soul should toughen itself beforehand for occasions of greater stress. And it is while fortune is kind that it should fortify itself against her violence. In days of peace, the soldier performs maneuvers, throws up earthworks with no enemy in sight, and wearies himself by gratuitous toil in order that he may be equal to unavoidable toil. If you would not have a man flinch when the crisis comes, train him before it comes. Such is the course with those men which those men have followed, who, in their imitation of poverty, have every month come almost to want, that they might never recoil from that which they had so often rehearsed. You need not suppose I mean meals like timons or paupers' huts or any other device which luxurious millionaires use to beguile the tedium of their lives. Let the palate be a real one, and let the coarse cloak, Let the bread be hard and grimy. Endure all these for 3 or 4 days at a time, sometimes for more, so that it may be a test of yourself instead of a mere hobby. Then I assure you, my dear Lucilius, you will leap for joy when filled with a penny worth of food, and you will understand that a man's peace of mind does not depend upon fortune, for even when angry, she grants enough for our needs. So he is, again, he's advising Lucilius to set aside several days where you have coarser food and coarser garments, and basically practice an imitation or a practice form of poverty, so that you'll prepare yourself for when the real thing comes, if it comes, you know, so that you accustom yourself to saying, like, is this really as bad as I feared, to only eat like bread and water, you know, for several days. And he says, do it for several days. So it's not just like a passing thing. Okay. So, the question is like this, is there a similar practice in Judaism? Now, I kind of led you on through the title by saying that we're going to compare Judaism's idea of fasting to the Stoic idea of fasting. In my opinion, there is an element of this in fasting, but the real time when we do this actually is in our festivals, okay? The Rambam writes in the Mor Nevuchim 3:43 as one of the reasons for Pesach and Sukkos. He says, as for the moral reason, so he's giving the moral dimension of Pesach and Sukkos, it is that man should always remember the days of bad amid the days of good, so that his gratitude to God should become great, and so that he should achieve humility and submissiveness. Accordingly, matzah and maror must be eaten on Pesach to remind us of what happened to us. Similarly, we leave our houses and dwell in huts, as is done by those who toil in the deserts and wastelands, in order to remember that this was our situation in times before. As the pasuk says, that I made the children of Israel dwell in huts, etc., and that we were moved from this situation to dwell in richly ornamented houses in the best and most fertile places on earth, due to Hashem's kindnesses and his promise to our fathers, inasmuch as they were perfected people in their philosophical outlook and their moral character. I'm referring to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. For this too is one of the pivots of the Torah. I mean, the belief that every benefit that will be or has been granted is due to Zechus Avos, the merit of the forefathers, since, quote, they kept the way of Hashem to do righteousness and justice, end quote. So, like Seneca, Seneca said, is precisely in times of immunity from care that the soul should toughen itself beforehand for occasions of greater stress. That's what we're doing, is in times of immunity from care, on our festivals, on our holidays, when we have no other concerns, we don't just go all out on luxury and opulence. We afflict ourselves, as Seneca said, for several days by, on Pesach, eating matzah and no chametz, right? Talk to almost any Jew and you'll find that they regard that as an affliction to give up. Like, they can't eat whatever they want. We can't eat whatever we want on Pesach, right? I say they because it doesn't bother me so much. And then on Sukkos, when we have, you know, especially in the olden days when we had the ingathering of the harvest, and this would be the time to take pride and to enjoy the wealth that we've amassed, the Torah kicks us out of our homes and we dwell in booths and sleep outside. Now, and this is an experience of akin to an experience of poverty, of people who have no homes and who sleep outside, right? Now, one of the key differences you'll notice is, first of all, I think it's hilarious that, like, Seneca specifically says, I'm not talking about things like pauper's huts. Now, I don't know what pauper's huts he's talking about, but that's exactly what the Torah does prescribe, is living in a pauper's hut, you know? But one of the stark differences is that the Stoics are viewing this as preparation for the future, that you should rehearse poverty now so that you can be prepared for it when it comes. The Torah, though, is looking at this is looking at the past, is you should remember the days of bad amid the times of good, and remember that where we came from, which was slaves and dwellers in the desert, and Hashem has brought us to this time where we have comfort and wealth and success, and we're supposed to remember the kindnesses that he did for us, and also remember why he did them for us, which was because of the Avos, because of the forefathers who were perfected in their ways and who actually deserved, you know, Hashem's beneficence in this manner, unlike ourselves. So I think it's an interesting contrast. I don't think, again, that we should disregard Seneca's take on this practice of poverty, meaning when you are observing Pesach and giving up your chametz, and when you're observing Sukkos and living outside, it is a way to practice practice poverty the way that he's saying. The ideas can both, you know, coexist. But I just don't think that that's, according to the Rambam at least, that's not what the Torah is trying to accomplish through this. I also wanted to add here, again, we're gonna talk more about this tomorrow when we talk about fasting, but that last thing that Seneca said of after you've gone through this, then you'll be able to leap for joy when filled with a penny worth of food. So Rabbi Moskowitz always used to say that for him, at least, the real purpose of fasting on Yom HaKippurim was not during the fast, but he said the real test is, how do you relate to food afterwards? And you'll see a lot of people, when they break their fast, will just scarf down food, you know, and they'll leap upon their food with that fantasy-based relationship with food, like somehow, like, I'm going to die if I don't eat food, or I just need to indulge myself, or I just got to get this pleasure. And what Rabbi Moskowitz's point was that if you fast properly, it should cause you to reflect on your relationship with food, and then you'll be able to partake of the food after the fast with with greater equanimity and a more realistic and objective relationship to that pleasure. This theme will be explored a little bit more tomorrow, but I think that's enough for today. I've already gone over my my usual time, understandably so, because this is a Seneca letter and not an Aurelius paragraph. So that's it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today and would like to support my production of even more Torah content, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. The link is in the description. Thank you to my listeners for listening, and thank you to my patrons for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.